I was guilty of this in the past myself. Like, I used to travel and try to visit national parks. I thought that getting into elevation was my only way of experiencing like beautiful landscapes. But birds have helped me realize that we have our own beautiful landscapes down here that are unlike anything else in the country.
Thanks for joining us on Louisiana's Playground Podcast, your roadmap to all things Lake Charles, Louisiana. I'm Brady Raynard.
And I'm Devin Corbello. We're excited to bring you the authentic stories and experiences of Southwest Louisiana with all the tools you need to build your own personal Lake Charles itinerary.
So if you were not paying attention, that is not the normal voice that you're hearing. Jillian was not available for the episode today. So my coworker, Devin, is so good enough to join us here on the podcast and take over and enjoy On V Eats with us. And of course, the conversation. Welcome to the co-hosting duties, Devin.
Thank you, Brady. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us a little bit quickly about yourself.
Sure. I am the new director of public relations here at Visit Lake Charles. Started about 2 months ago. And Lake Charles is my home, Southwest Louisiana's home.
And so, of course, a chance to kind of come on the playground and enjoy your time.
Absolutely.
We're really excited about it, especially for this episode, episode 91. So we're nearing 100. Mm-hmm. And this is the episode that we finally talked about a topic that I've had circled for a long time, birding.
Yes, absolutely. It's coming up. It's an up and coming trend again, mm-hmm. Which is exciting to see.
And so before we get to that conversation, we talked to James Smithers, who is a birding guide and has become really an expert in the last about 6 years or so. Before we get to that, we, of course, have to swing by another wonderful On V Eats. And this week, we head to Mazin's, which is really a Lake Charles staple.
Right. It is like everyone goes there for special events, for a night out, and we went for lunch, which was fantastic.
Yeah, 25 years in business, all the recipes done through his family recipes, and he just kind of said his talent and his knowledge and the things that he knows are great. They've kind of rotated the menu throughout years. But I did love the story that the owner told us, that people still come in and ask for items that haven't been on the menu in 15 years.
I mean, he said it. He had an experience that day that someone asked for like a fish dish, yep. And it wasn't something that had been around for a while.
Yeah, so, but that shows you the kind of the level of the quality and familiarity that mm-hmm. obviously a place like Mazin's has in the area. So they kind of combined some Mediterranean style dishes with some Louisiana favorites and flavors to create a place that has a menu that not a lot of other restaurants have.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think Southwest Louisiana has a really great job with their restaurants. They incorporate their own culture yeah. with Cajun and Creole culture, and Mazin's is no different.
But it does open Mediterranean style, comes out with pita bread and like a garlic tahini, and I thought it was really good.
It is really good, and make sure you have mints on standby whenever you leave, because that garlic is is pungent, but it's
yes,
so good.
Yes.
It's a great little palate cleanser.
Yeah, and you kind of dip it in. It's super creamy from the pita bread that's really soft, mm-hmm. and overall, it's a nice little start to the meal.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of helps you get into the Mediterranean, Greek and Lebanese mood, you know.
Yeah, I like that. Then we opened with two different appetizers, the fried asparagus, which is really cool.
It was in a shape of a log cabin.
Yeah, it comes across like long ways fried, so crunchy, and then that lemon butter sauce on top adds such a great flavor. The asparagus is crunchy, but still perfectly cooked. And I really like the texture of it. I think that's what sells you on it the most. It's still very fresh tasting, mm-hmm. but then it's got the texture from the actual asparagus and the crunchy of the outside, the mm-hmm. butter sauce as well. It's really a perfect appetizer.
The lemon sauce really complements the asparagus, and these asparagus logs, if you will, they're big. It's a filling appetizer for sure. But then we also had, I think, one of their specials today. I don't know how often they do this, but it was the crab claws. Mm-hmm. It was sauteed and fried. We did half and half.
Yeah, and both of those are great because it comes with two different sauces. That same lemon butter mm-hmm. sauce that just keeps appearing because it's so good and everything kind of has it. And it's like, all right, I completely understand why that is. Right. And yeah, so it's of course Louisiana blue crab, and it's just so good. All the little claws that come with it that you dip it. And we'll find out what happened to the rest of the crab soon.
Right.
I think it was on top of my fish.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. That was really good. And they had, besides the lemon butter sauce, it was like a remoulade sauce that was also pretty good as well.
Light tang to it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So you can share it. You can have it for yourself and, you know, figure out what sauce you have.
Sure.
Sauce you like. Yeah.
And then so for the actual lunch portion, which, yeah, I mean, this was a pretty extensive lunch that we had.
Yeah.
You went with the crepes, right?
I did. It was something different, something that you really can't find anywhere else in Lake Charles, to my knowledge at least. But it was seafood crepes. And it were two crepes with stuffed with crab meat, crawfish tails, and shrimp, and topped with crawfish tails and shrimp. And again, surprise, surprise, the lemon butter sauce.
Yeah, yeah.
it keeps on coming back, but they were so good. It was also rich but light in a way, so it's a great lunch option for not having a heavy meal and something that you can still enjoy, and it's all Louisiana seafood.
Yeah, and I think that came up for me a lot, is that everything was so rich because it's so much butter. It's mm-hmm. so flavorful. So if you love a good butter flavor, a good butter sauce, you're going to be in heaven. So I went with one of the more popular fish dishes called the Lunch Fish Aladdin, which is a jumbo lump crab meat on top of redfish, mm-hmm. And then that saffron lemon butter sauce as well that kind of coats it. And yeah, it's so good. The fish is so flaky. The crab itself is so flavorful. Such a rich butter flavor from the mm-hmm. sauce, and all of it just pairs really well. You can kind of, there's enough sauce around the edge that you're able to dip it into it.
Yeah.
And just a great, great fish dish that you get so many different flavors, and then the butter just elevates everything.
And it's a big piece too. I mean, for lunch plate, it's still a big piece and a pretty good price as well. So it's highly recommend.
Yeah. And I like each of the dishes comes with kind of a side of fried potatoes, carrots, green beans, mm-hmm. which is a nice little side to each of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's so different tasting than everything else.
Yeah. And the good thing about having all that sauce, you can dip your vegetables and your potatoes in that sauce as well. And I'm a sauce guy. So
yeah, I feel you.
Yeah.
And all of it's so good. But the star of the show, and what I think most people make sure to get when they come, is of course that souffle.
Right. And you order it ahead of time because it takes about 10 to 15 minutes to cook. So just be prepared. Tell your server at the head of the mill, order it. And you can get it in two different sauces, I think. The white chocolate sauce, which is their most popular, and the Grand Marnier sauce.
And yeah, so I was shocked at how large it was.
Yeah.
I've heard so many great things about Mazin's mm-hmm. souffles, and of course it did not remotely disappoint because it comes with that whipped cream there on the side that you just kind of coated. It's obviously homemade.
Yeah.
Everything about it is so unique and so spectacular.
And it was four of us at the table, and we all split it, and I felt like I had just enough, you know, so it's easy to split. Amongst yourselves, but also I don't think you'll feel guilty if you eat it all by yourself because it's light and fresh and just so delicious.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine eating one of those by myself though. That
I could imagine.
especially after all I had already eaten. Yeah. But that's what's so nice is that anytime you get a dessert like that, that you feel like you can split and yet still feel like you've got plenty of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We got the white chocolate, sweet, great texture. It was mm-hmm. creamy. I think the texture is what kind of sells it because it's kind of crispy on the edge, but it's so soft.
Yeah.
And all of the flavors pair so well together because it's not overly sweet.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's you don't feel guilty. At least I don't feel guilty mm-hmm. after it. We'll see tomorrow on the scale how guilty I actually am. But no, it was very light.
Yeah, and such a great meal. and such a really good time. And I need to go back for dinner because I know they have a great bar as well.
That's my favorite thing to go to. They have a nice bar in the middle. They've updated it a few years ago with some beautiful chandeliers. Mm-hmm. And the bartenders know how to make a great drink. I always go with the martini with the twist myself. And the lamb lollipops are really great at dinner time too. So get a drink, grab an appetizer, and then grab a dessert. That's usually a good meal for me.
From a great meal to a great guest, we welcome on James Smithers, a Southwest Louisiana native and birding guide with American Birding Guides. You know, James fell in love with birding after a male painted bunting showed up at his backyard feeder. We'll hear more on that story here in just a minute. And he's really been chasing the next great sighting ever since. He's also deeply involved in Gulf Coast conservation and helps lead birding trips and beginner walks across the region. So today, we have him on to talk birding 101 and why Southwest Louisiana is a haven for birders. Welcome to the show, James.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
Southwest Louisiana is known for big city amenities and small town charm, which makes for a vast array of experiences that one can add to their itinerary, from the types of food to the outdoor adventures and national and regional entertainment that the lake area draws. But before we get started, we'd like to ask each of our guests a few questions to let our listeners know you better and how you play in Louisiana's playground. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. Crawfish or gumbo?
Crawfish at Mary's Lounge.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I like the specificity. Why?
In my personal opinion, it is the best crawfish and experience in mm-hmm. Southwest Louisiana. The energy at Mary's Lounge is great. Yeah. You truly feel like you're at a crawfish boil. It's the best way to experience a crawfish boil without having to deal with boiling the crawfish
yourself. Which is always the better. Because, right. you know, there's nothing like having to clean up the crawfish boil. It's much better just to attend it, right?
That's yeah, right.
100%.
It's kind of like owning a boat. No one wants to own a boat. You just want to know a guy who owns a boat.
Exactly.
And so, well, then they took Jason Josh to the right place because I think that's where they took him was right, to Mary's Lounge.
So. All right. Number two, poolside or beachside?
Beachside. Yeah. Beachside all day.
We'll
get more into that in our conversation okay. about birds. But yeah, beachside all
Ooh,
day.
I like that. Okay, concert or comedy show?
Ooh, concert.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any like favorite concert spots here in Lake Charles?
Honestly, the live music here in Lake Charles is great. Yeah. I just like going sitting out at Crying Eagle on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to live music out there.
Yeah, no doubt. It's really great.
So nice about it, right? Like we've got so many different local spots mm-hmm. that have great live music and it's just kind of sit back, chill back.
Yeah.
And then festival season's coming up, so you get the live music there as well.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let's shift talk to birds as we've kind of alluded to. For someone that's never been birding, what is birding and how is it different than just like seeing some birds outside?
So the easiest way to explain this, there's many different levels to birding. How serious you want to take it is up to you. But all in all, birding is just the act of actively observing birds. Whether you're listening in your backyard or watching your feeders, I mean, we all consider that birding. Some of us take it a little bit more seriously to where we're keeping lists. Listing is a huge thing in the birding community. Like I have a yard list. I have what's called a patch list, which is the lake here behind us. I bird it regularly and I keep a running list of what I've observed at these spots.
That's pretty awesome. Well, I've got a cardinal that comes in the backyard a lot at my house. And I've seen a blue jay as well.
Oh. Add those to your yard list.
Yeah. Our yard list is getting pretty good.
Right. We were talking before that. It just kind of sneaks up on you. You know, as you're getting older, you start to say, oh, like what's that bird or what's that sound that it's making? And so I'm going to have to start a list as well.
Yeah, you should. You should. And if you have any questions, you know, shoot them to me.
You're the man. Yeah.
So when it comes to birding, how did you get hooked, so to speak? We kind of touched on it in your intro.
Yeah. So I am a product of COVID birders. I was locked down working from home during COVID, and I legitimately just started sitting on my back porch every day and keeping my feeders full and observing the birds that came to my feeders. At the time, it was probably February, right before COVID started. Male painted bunting showed up on my feeder, which for those of you who aren't familiar with that bird, it's probably the most visually striking bird in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's red and blue and yellow. It looks like a bird from the Neotropics, but They breed here in Louisiana. This was actually a bird in the winter, so it was considered rare at the time. But in recent years, we've kind of gotten more and more kind of painted buntings deciding to overwinter here in Louisiana. So it's nice. You can almost see them year round here now.
Yeah. Well, during COVID, I lost my sense of taste and smell, and you picked up a hobby. So
that's right. I sharpened up my sight and hearing.
That's awesome. From your perspective as a guide, why do you think so many people find a deep, almost meditative passion for identifying birds?
Yeah. It's very meditative. I mean, it really brings you to places that you probably would never go if you weren't looking for birds. Like a lot of people, locals that have lived in Cameron and Calcasieu Parish their whole lives don't even know that we have a chenier called Pivotal Woods, which is a protected bird sanctuary on our immediate coast. And it is essential migratory habitat during the spring and fall months. You can go in there any day during, you know, mid to late April into May and observe over 100 species of birds in this small little patch of woods.
That has to be so unique in terms of, it's one of those things, it's one of those passions, hobbies, that is, you don't realize how many birds you see and types of birds until, like you said, you start counting them, you start making the list, and all of a sudden you realize, man, there are a ton of birds that you see and don't even catalog every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I always remind people we're extremely spoiled here in Southwest Louisiana because we have great diversity of birds year round, even in the summer months where it's, you know, honestly pretty miserable birding with the heat and the bugs. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get out. But even if you do get out, I like to do what's called a big day. My birthday's in July. So I always do like a summer big day, which is where I try to see as many species of birds as I can in one day.
And what's your record for that?
My record for that is 115.
Wow, and
that
115?
That was me and a friend. We teamed up and we went from the Kisatchie Forest and made our way down to the Cameron Coast in one day. So we were just kind of hitting as much habitat diversity as we could.
That's really cool.
I mean, you saw more than a quarter of the birds that we get here.
That's right. In one day. That's right. And that's really any day in Louisiana. If you make a strong effort, you can probably observe 100 species.
Oh, and we're really lucky too, because we fall in between like two migratory paths. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we, you know, we're, like I said earlier, we're essential stopover habitat. So that meaning we are the first land a lot of birds see when they make their big migration over the Gulf. And we're the last land they see when they're making their way back to South America, Central America during the fall. So our land here and our habitat here is essential for these birds to fuel up and refuel to make it to their final destination.
Yeah, that's a long flight. Now, I see the term life bird. What does that mean?
So as we go back to listing, right? Actively listing, we all keep a life list of birds that we've observed over the span of our birding career, I guess. Mm-hmm. And a life bird would be your first time either seeing or hearing a bird. We would consider that a life bird. Some people call it a lifer. Mm-hmm. It's a little more slang term, but yeah, it's the first time you've ever observed a bird, whether that be by sound or by sight.
That's really interesting. What's your life bird? Do you have?
Oh, my most recent life bird. So it's a running list, right? I keep adding birds to my life list.
Yeah.
My most recent life bird was a snowy owl. So there was a snowy owl. It's a really striking all white owl. And it was hanging out about 10 minutes from the Milwaukee airport. I was visiting some friends in Milwaukee and, I made it a point. I knew the bird was there because I was keeping track of eBird observations. Mm-hmm. And I made it a point to stop there before I flew out. That was this past weekend.
So I was going to say, so owls count. I understand that they are in fact birds, but I wasn't sure exactly, you know, because an owl feels as much like a bird, kind of like an octopus does a fish.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They're similar, but they're different. They're the same habitat. So a hawk, eagle, owl is the same as a canary in terms of what you would say on your list.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are our birds of prey. That's what we call them. Yeah. Birds of prey, the raptors, some people will say.
Right.
Birds that really prey on other birds.
Good point.
Yeah. So going back to like maybe tips for a beginner, what's a tool of the trade for like any beginners that want to start birding?
Sure. I think the first step, of course, is like getting a pair of binoculars, whether you just get like a hand-me-down pair or you can go to a thrift shop and buy a cheap pair. And honestly, I would highly recommend like going on a bird walk with like the Gulf Coast Bird Club, which is a local organization. David Booth does a really good job. He puts on a beginner bird walk the second to last Saturday every month.
Okay.
A lot of times they do it at Sam Houston, Jones State Park. But now that migration's about to start, they're probably going to be changing their location based on, you know, what the bird diversity is looking at. But that's a, it's an awesome way to start. There's a lot of beginners there.
Is there a way to keep track of like where they're like, is there a Facebook page or email list?
Yep. I would keep track with them on the Gulf Coast Bird Club Facebook page.
Okay, cool.
That's the best place. They always post what they've got going on.
Yeah.
Is there certain birding etiquette that that's kind of observed between birders that is like, make sure you know this going in?
Yeah. I think my main point would be to have an etiquette towards the birds, right? Never trying to get too close. Like we're merely observing these birds, and you know, they're busy. They're trying to eat. You know, that's their main.
They've got to go
goal.
To work.
That's right. Yeah, I would say be mindful of the birds, right? Limit your use of playback, which is when you're kind of playing a bird's call to attract it closer to you, whether that's to get a confirmation of what you're looking at or trying to get a vocalization out of it to get confirmation. Limit your playback, and also just be mindful of the habitat that you're in. If there's trails, try to stay on the trail. Most of the time there's trails for a reason, and they don't want you stomping on the habitat for the that the birds are using.
Yeah. We want them to come back, so to limit your footprint as much as possible.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I think there are a lot of times people think of Lake Charles, and some of it have to do with our marketing in terms of how much we market our food and culture here, and then, of course, people know us for the casinos. What would surprise someone most about the birding here, considering that when people think of Lake Charles, they don't think of our birding scene necessarily? I mean, birders do. They think, like I said, the food, the festivals, casinos, etc.
Yeah, I think what would surprise them is the sheer abundance of birds we have here in Southwest Louisiana. I mean, we have a large diversity, one thing, and we also have just a huge number of birds. So we're passing up our winter season, which we do what's called Christmas bird counts. Here in Southwest Louisiana, you know, we're known for having large numbers of waterfowl and like large numbers of blackbirds. There's any morning on a Christmas bird count, if you're in the right place, you can see anything from 50 to 100,000 blackbirds like streaming overhead, which is a spectacle that you don't really get to experience in other parts of the country.
Sure.
And you touched on this a while ago about why Southwest Louisiana is situated perfectly between these two migratory paths. Can you talk more about why our geography is a magnet for these birds, from like the marshes to the forest, things like that?
That's right. I think you touched on it there yourself. It's the diversity of habitat and the vast amount of wetlands we have here. When you have as much water as we have here in Louisiana, water equals life,
right?
Whether that be birds, insects, even mammals, like we have a large variety of wildlife in general here in Louisiana, and it's mainly due to the diversity of habitat and the amount of water we have, the amount of wetlands we have in Louisiana.
Well, I believe there's over 400 species that either call Southwest Louisiana home or at least spend some time vacationing while here. I like to always say that the Canadian goose that come down, I always like to say, you know, it's our visitors from Canada just coming down. They found a Verbo or a hotel and they're staying for a little bit, come and see us. How many of those do you believe that you've seen?
So I actually have a list of the birds that I've seen in Calcasieu and Cameron Parish. I believe my Calcasieu list is around 296 species.
Okay.
And my Cameron Parish list is right around 316, I believe.
Wow.
So you may have seen, I mean, it, once you cross-reference those, you may have seen all 400.
That's right. Yeah. There's definitely birds that have been observed in Southwest Louisiana that I haven't seen in these parishes. Maybe I've seen them elsewhere.
Yeah.
Right. But on my parish list, there's definitely some that I've missed out on that I'd really like to add.
Interesting. Okay. So you had mentioned lifers in the first time that you see that particular bird. Is there a cool slang for like bucket list birds?
Not really, other than bucket list birds. Yeah. Okay, I think bucket list birds is a good term. I think birders have that as well. You know, places they'd like to travel, to see birds, which is something I actively do. Most of my trips that I take, my vacations are kind of focused around, the birding, even if I'm traveling with non-birders, they probably don't like it, but you know, I'm in the middle of planning a trip to Guatemala in July and I'm going with a non-birder, but I've already started to kind of plan out my own birding itinerary.
As he wears the I'd rather be birding hoodie. So.
Yeah, exactly. I had to let y'all know. I'm happy to be on the podcast, but I would always rather be birding. Right.
I skipped birding for this.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the bucket list birds, are there two or three birds on your bucket list that we should see here?
Ooh, oh yeah, for Southwest Louisiana, definitely one I mentioned earlier, the painted bunting. Uh-huh. A great time to see them coming up, starting in the spring, and then we're lucky to have them as breeders here, meaning they're going to spend the summer here with us.
Okay.
They get a little less easy to find during the breeding months because they're more focused on, you know, nesting and tending to their young. In the spring, it's a great time. Keep your feeders up. Keep your black oil sunflower seed feeders up and you know, just keep an eye on them.
There's an app you keep on referencing. Can you hear what birds sound like in case the average Joe doesn't know what to look for?
Sure. So the platform that we use to observe and log our observations is called eBird, but the same, this is all created by the lab at Cornell University. They have a heavy focus on birds. There's an app called Merlin, which is an identification tool, right? They even have what's called Sound ID now, where you can kind of press record on it, and it will tell you what it hears in your yard or wherever you're birding if you're hearing something. It's not 100% correct, but it is getting better. It gets better the more we observe into their AI. But it'll spit out observations for you.
That's really cool.
So what would you call, you know, you mentioned the migration. What's our peak season, do you feel like?
So I think most people would think our peak season was the spring, right? We have a huge diversity of birds. On any day, you can see anything from 100 to 150 species here in Southwest Louisiana during the spring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my personal, I enjoy the fall a little bit better because the fall's more of like a slow trickle.
Mm-hmm.
Spring migration comes and goes very quickly. It's like it's just started here in March. Like I'm seeing people report Northern Parula, which is one of our first songbird migrants into Southwest Louisiana. They breed here. They're here all summer. But it kind of moves very quickly throughout April and May when, you know, fall migration kind of starts in July and you're still seeing fall migrants in October. It's this nice, like slow burn of birds, which is what I love. I love the spring cause it's a spectacle, you know, and experiencing something like a fallout is possible in the spring, which in the fall it's not. Kind of ironic, the term fallout, but fallout. And if you'd like, I can elaborate on what
a fallout
is. So a fallout is a weather-driven event where birds that are migrating over the Gulf hit land and they drop immediately. So they'll drop into our coastal chenilles, our oak woodlots, things like that. And it's usually caused by either heavy north winds, they're fighting those north winds over the Gulf during their migration, and they're extremely tired and ready to get to land. So as soon as they see our coastline, they drop into the trees and start feeding. Or something like we had this weekend where we had thunderstorms coming from the north, And if it's timed right, it'll hit the coast, the storms, and those will cause the birds to fall out into the trees to stop their migration for a moment.
I bet that is really neat to see.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I've had the pleasure of experiencing maybe four or so fallouts on our coast, and it is truly something I can barely even explain to people. It's pretty magical. Just seeing like thousands of songbirds fall into, you know, a patch of oaks.
That's incredible. I would have to say that has to be one of your must visit spots then, if you're able to see it.
Definitely. If you can time it right. The thing is, it's hard to predict a fallout if you're traveling into Southwest Louisiana. If you live here, it's easy, right? If you see the weather forecast and it's forecasting north winds or northerly storms, you can plan to be in the woods on the coast to experience that. If you're traveling in, you kind of hope that whatever week you chose, hope that it's the weather's in your favor for that.
Speaking of that, what are some of your must visit spots here in Southwest Louisiana? Really, places that you point and you say that if you're coming here for it, you got to go here.
Definitely, yeah. So there's a lot along the Creole Nature Trail. First off, you know, you've definitely got to visit Sabine National Wildlife Refuge. They've got a great trail called Blue Goose Trail. I think the Wetlands Walkway might be closed at the moment. But the Blue Goose Trail, that's a great spot to see sparrows and catch like wading birds, like huge numbers of ibis and egrets and stuff like that. And then make your way down to the coast, Bird Highway 82, and check every spot on Holly Beach.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really great, you know, if you're into gulls, I'm into gulls. I love a big flock of gulls roosting on the beach. That's one of my favorites. But Holly Beach is also great for shorebirds. And then any coastal woodlot. So Pivotow Woods is the main one. Everyone knows people have traveled from all over the world to bird Pivotow Woods. It's that great in the springtime. And then we have on the east side of Cameron, we've got places like Hollister Chenier, which are owned by the Nature Conservancy. They actually have limited time. I would check their website, but they open it for a few weeks in the spring and they open it for a few weeks in the fall as well, open to the public. And then we have some local birding patches too, like on eBird or even on Google Maps, you can look up like Willow Island, which is it's a private property that's been owned by the same family for the last, 60 years or so. And it's a spot that birders have been using to see birds for a very long time.
I love that you mentioned seagulls. They have to be the most unhinged of the birds.
Yeah.
Because you can see them in parking lots over, you know, and then obviously on the beach, I've seen them eating other birds as well.
That's right. Yeah. They're just
unhinged birds.
I mean, they'll take your fries and everything.
100%. Yeah. If we were to walk out on the beach right now and pour out some McDonald's French fries, like we'd attract some gulls.
All right.
So, we had talked about you being a birding guide as well. What is the biggest asset of hiring a birding guide, getting someone that can help guide you through it that maybe you could struggle to do if you were just on your own?
Sure. I think the most important thing would be their local knowledge. You know, not to toot my own horn, but I know Southwest Louisiana better than eBird can tell you. Most people will use eBird as a tool to kind of plan out a birding trip. And a lot of experienced birders, that's all they need to plan a trip. But if you're not so comfortable and you've never been to Southwest Louisiana, a guide's local knowledge will really, really be the most beneficial thing. And a fresh set of eyes and ears, someone that's been birding out here for years. Yeah, their experience and their local knowledge, I would say.
And I think the passion is what is contagious.
That's right. I really love, one of my favorite things is showcasing what we have out here.
Yeah.
I'm very prideful about the Gulf Coast birding. And I think we're a little less known because just over the Texas border, you've got places like High Island, which are world-renowned birding locations for people during the spring. But our birding and our habitat is just as good out here. It's just not as well known.
That means less traffic and you get to a better chance to see those birds.
That is absolutely correct. You most likely will not see me at High Island unless I'm guiding out there, but I would pick birding in Cameron over that any day of the week.
And so how do you structure your guide trips? Do you like chase specific target birds, I guess, depending on the time of year, or do you focus more on the habitat?
So mainly it's based on what the client's needs are, right? Some clients are focused on like bird photography, right?
Right.
If they're just mainly focused on photography, then I'm going to plan a trip around the best places to photograph birds. If some people want certain species, then I'm going to focus on those certain species. And then my favorite type of guiding is when it's just their first time ever birding on the Gulf Coast and I get to show them everything, right? Mm-hmm. That's the most exciting type of guiding that I like to do.
Why, you know, so from that, I know that you went from being a casual observer in 2020 to now becoming a guide. How does that end up leading always, I'm sure, for many birders into stewardship?
I think personally what happened with me is I was getting so much from the birds that I was really trying to find ways that I can give back to the birds. And coastal stewardship is a great way to do that. We have a pretty vast breeding population of birds on our coast, and as if they're not fighting enough, right? We're one of the states that experiences the most habitat loss in the country, most land loss in the country every year. They're already fighting against those odds. And stewardship helps us educate the general public on what's going on out here, what birds are breeding here, and why we should be respectful of things like the dunes on the beach. The dunes in Cameron Parish, though they're small and they're not like the big dunes you would see on like the east or west coast, mm-hmm. They're still essential habitat for birds, for our breeding birds in the summertime. So we've got to try to protect that as much as we can in a place where cars and ATVs and UTVs are allowed on the beach. Mm-hmm. Like, we want people to still be able to enjoy themselves, but we want them to do it responsibly and keep the birds in mind whenever they're doing that.
Well, and in that same vein, what can listeners do to help, even if it's just simple ways to support the bird community?
Yeah, I think, you know, anything from sharing a Facebook post when they're looking for volunteers, mm-hmm. or volunteering yourself. I mean, coastal stewardship in the summer months out here, of course, we've got like Memorial Day weekend, 4th of July weekend. Those are the big holidays where the beaches are really busy. Mm-hmm. If you can volunteer a few hours and just go out and help them spread the word, that's great. If you can't, just sharing the post on Facebook. I know the Audubon Society's often mm-hmm. the one that's in charge of coastal stewardship. Mm-hmm. And there's other ways to volunteer too. They do like beach plantings where they're trying to restore habitat by planting essential beach grass. You know, just try to get involved in whatever way that you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when someone comes in and finally just says, you know what, I'm going to bird. I want to spend some time, whether it be a visitor or a local, what do you hope they feel by the time that they've kind of capped off that day?
Yeah, I think I hope they feel a sense of pride of what we have here in Southwest Louisiana. You know, I was guilty of this in the past myself. Like, I used to travel and try to visit national parks. I thought that getting into elevation was my only way of experiencing like beautiful landscapes. Mm-hmm. But birds have helped me realize that we have our own beautiful landscapes down here that are unlike anything else in the country. I mean, driving down to Cameron Parish and driving, whether you're going down the east side and going over the Gibbstown Bridge and it's endless marsh as mm-hmm. far as you can see. That's an amazing sight. I've never been anywhere else in the country that, you know, you can get views like that.
Yeah.
It's relaxing, isn't it? Like, I love that drive to Cameron Parish.
No, it's great. And both ways, too. Even driving down Sabine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Driving through the Sabine Refuge, still coastal marsh as far as you can see. Mm-hmm. It's really gorgeous. The sunrises and sunsets are beautiful. It's
the best in the world.
That's right.
At least some of the... You know what? Disprove me. They're the best in the world. Sorry, I don't...
Yeah, no.
I mean, how are you going to disprove me?
Right.
I would have to agree with you.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find someone else to argue it, because I will not argue that point.
Thanks for James for joining us here on the show. And the biggest thank you of all, though, goes out to you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please do us a favor. Leave us a rating or a review wherever you listen to podcasts.
It will help us grow our audience and further share the experience, the unique experiences Lake Charles and Southwest Louisiana has to offer. Go to visit lakecharles.org/podcast for more episodes, where to eat, and events happening this weekend. I'm Devin Corbello.
And I'm Brady Raynard. Thanks again for coming to play at Louisiana's Playground. Set you.